Welcome to Career Conversations. Today we're going to focus in on the role of health and well-being in relation to the management of your career and how your career can actually enhance your health and well-being. Joining me today to discuss this is Caroline Mahon, who is Health Promotion Officer here in DCU. Caroline is actually going to share her own career story, and this will be of particular interest for any of our listeners that are also considering pursuing a career in health promotion. So thank you very much for joining us today, Caroline.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Siobhan.
I think we might just start off with yourself, Caroline. I think it'd be very useful for the listeners to maybe hear how you decided on a career in health and well-being and how you have actually developed it.
Yeah, of course. That's a good question. And I think it was probably multiple things coming together, but I think around the CAO time, I was a pretty relaxed student, I have to say. I wasn't going for your 600 points. I wasn't under major pressure. I had kind of, I suppose my personality was bringing me towards home economics and biology. So they were my favourite subjects. And I thought about teaching, but I didn't actually get the points for that. And I thought, I don't want to put down a teaching subject, teaching a subject that I've no interest in, because that's not what I, you know, that wouldn't be aligned with what I wanted. So my second choice was environmental health, actually. And the career guidance lady at school told me, don't do that, you won't like the job. She was like, people don't like to see an environmental health officer coming. So I kind of laughed at her, because I didn't have the best relationship with her, so I didn't take any notice of her. But so I ended up putting down environmental health. So I did that in DIT for 4 years. And I did it predominantly because of the subjects. So there was a lot of, obviously, everything in our environment that impacts our health. So it was more around water, food. So it was science-based. And I really, really enjoyed that. But I did find certain subjects I was more drawn towards than others. So maybe some public health. I always did better in those assignments. Then I went on placement and I realised, oh, I don't really like this. It was predominantly food and it was food inspections. And I just thought, no, this isn't, that career lady was right. So do listen to them. So I kind of took a year out. I knew I wanted to do something in health. I looked at doing nutrition and dietetics, and I thought, oh, that's so specific, and I'm not sure how the job situation was with dietitians at the time. And then I looked at health promotion, and there's a master's in a new IG, so I decided to do that. So I did that, and then that just opened the floodgates, I think, for the passion. You know, I already kind of knew I was interested in health, but that really solidified that, and learning about the social determinants of health or how these broader things are impacting your health and well-being just had a massive impact on me. So I did that. And as part of that, we did a placement with whoever you could get placement with, because, you know, health promotion isn't always the most fruitful for jobs, because I think, you know, we don't make money necessarily out of this, although there is some workplace stuff coming up now. So I did my placement with the HSE at the time with the nutrition lady, and I was obsessed with nutrition through health promotion, but I've kind of moved away from that again. So I did my master's, and then I went to Australia and I started working there in health promotion, which is actually a little bit of a funny story, so I might tell it. Because I always remember when I finished my master's and I was planning to go, like a lot of the girls in my class were saying, oh, you'll be grand for a job in Australia, you'll be fine. You know, they're all about health promotion. And I landed there, the reality was very different, because I guess, you know, you're on a visa, you're, as we used to say, you're fresh off the boat. And I was finding, and I didn't have any experience, like, bar my work placement. So anyway, I looked for a job in Melbourne for about 3 or 4 months, and then I did my fruit picking. So I picked grapes for a couple of months, and on my last like week of that, my old lecturer from NUIG emailed me and said, Caroline, would you write an article on trying to find work in Australia? And I thought, well, this is hilarious, because like I'm usually doing the opposite, I'm picking grapes. And I said, yeah, no problem. I was like, look, I can write up something that I know. And I thought, do you know what, I'll ring the local health service and sees there any health promotion people. And there was one health promotion lady, Jane, and I said, Jane, can I come in and chat with you? And she said, yeah, no problem. So I had a meeting with her and just asked her for some advice, and then I wrote up my article. And she actually said to me that day, Caroline, we're after getting massive funding from the government, and she was like, we've just recruited some new health promotion people. She was like, if anything comes up, I'll think of you. And I thought, there's no way I'm coming back to Mildura, like it was rural Australia. I was like, no way, no way. And then I moved to Brisbane and I was working in a bar, and I got the call, I got an email from Jane, and I applied for the job as a healthy children's coordinator with the health service there, and I ended up getting it. So I moved back. So yeah, you just never know where things take you.
Well, in technical terms, that's what's called planned happenstance. So you planned your meeting with Jane, you know, you took what you could from it, and then there was a bit of serendipity out of the whole thing, just because there was a little bit, you had to get into the driving seat there a little bit as well, Caroline, do you know what I mean? You had to be motivated to go and do what you did. And the irony of it is, except your lecturer had, you know, got in contact with you, you probably would have never have thought to contact the local health service and see, could you have a conversation with somebody about health promotion and opportunities. Absolutely. In Australia.
And it kind of just reminded me of that. I know sometimes when you are a student and you are reaching out to people, you can feel vulnerable, or you can feel
sure.
But you know, I think it's so important, and once you're out there talking to people, you know.
Yeah. Well, I always turn it back on yourself. If somebody approached you because you have some bit of knowledge about something, would you say yes to a conversation? So, you know, 99% of us would say, of course, if somebody asked me to have a conversation with somebody because I know something about something, of course I would say yes. So just bring forward that same thought process that actually more people are alike than unalike, you know, in those types of situations as well. So all the worst that can happen is they say, no, I can't help you, I don't have time, blah blah blah. And if that's the worst that's going to happen, that's not bad day's work. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Caroline, so your background is in environmental health, but obviously people in health promotion come from all sorts of backgrounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So you know, if you think about DCU at the moment, I'm thinking there is, you know, sports science and health, or the psychology, so those courses tend to maybe pull in some health promotion, but you can really come from any background. I'm part of the Association for Health Promotion in Ireland, and through that there is an international accreditation now that's been brought in, so this is brand new for health promotion practitioners. So it's about 2 years officially in the system, but I guess it's been brought in because a lot of people were working in health promotion that maybe didn't study health promotion, but kind of nearly not fell into it. But I guess through work experience, through maybe social work or whatever avenue, they sort of ended up in a job, and that was to kind of give some accreditation to them, and also just to the whole industry of health promotion going forward. So I think that's really positive.
So that's the Association of Health Promotion in Ireland, is it?
Yeah, and so we're part of a network that's an international, it's called the International Union for Health Promotion Education, and that's who would accredit you as a health promotion practitioner. So
that's really brilliant, because I often find associations can be very kind of really good careers information resource. Obviously, you can find out a little bit about the profession itself, you know, what the association does, but it often gives you a broader careers understanding as well of the potential of the career. So if anyone's listening and kind of saying, oh, I don't know, I'll have a little bit more of a think about a career in health promotion, something like that website can be hugely resourceful as one of the many things that you might investigate when looking at a career in health promotion. So what has been the highlight for you, you know, during your health, you know, your career in health promotion, that you went, yes, we've got that over the line?
What's been my highlight? I guess, you know, I don't know, it's quite, I guess you're working in something that's always working towards change. So some days it could just be a positive conversation with somebody, or other days it could be something massive. But I remember when I did move to Meldrum, I think maybe your first jobs are more sort of influential or more, you know, it's a bit like a first boyfriend. I always used to say that. I always romanticize Meldrum. And, you know, and so I'll never have a boss as good as my boss in Meldrum. But when I started there, I was brand new to the professional world, you know, in Australia. Like before that, I was, you know, waitressing and picking grapes. So it didn't require, I guess, my career skills and everything I'd learned in college. So that pressure was kind of off, but the pressure was kind of on now. And I was put in charge of early childhood services. So for the whole region of Meldrum, which is probably, you drive around it maybe in 4 or 5 hours. So like not the size of Ireland, but it's quite a big hinterland. I had to register all the early childhood services to this health promotion initiative. And we had kind of KPIs because there was a lot of money invested in this kind of trialed I guess in essence, our jobs were a trial as well. So they're doing research projects on the fact that we were there. So we had a target of 90%, and I hit the target of 99%. So it was just one early childhood service. And I remember getting, you know, presenting, and there was like the head of the whole initiative, and she was based in Melbourne City, and she was there, and she was delighted, and I was just proud of myself, because I think I had extra barriers there. You know, there was, you know, I would call up early childhood service and I would ask for Sheila, and her name was Shelley, and they'd be all over laughing at you. So there was kind of an extra, you know, element there. But I think when you're starting out, yeah, that was definitely one of my top. And actually, now that I'm thinking about that, I always remember as well, there was one early childhood service that was really resistant to working with us. She was like, she just had a bad taste. She'd met the health promotion officer before me, and she just really was like, I don't want to do this. Or, you know, we were talking about healthy relationships and sexual health, but not sexual health in that sense, again, talking about healthy relationships, and it was for an early childhood service. So I thought, well, you know, she's a bit anxious, and she was quite, like, she was about 3 hours drive away. I said, I'm just going to book in a meeting with her and just go and have a chat with her. And I did. I had a couple of more phone calls with her. And I remember in the head office in Melbourne, they said, don't work with, you know, if people aren't willing to work with you, don't work with them. Just give your energy to people who are willing to show up. And I just thought, no, I'm just going to give her a go. And she ended up signing up, and she ended up winning like an award under that, you know, through the state of Victoria for all her work she'd done in health and wellbeing in early childhood sector. And I thought that I don't know, there's something about trusting your intuition there and your own skill set. And relationships are so important in health promotion, because you're working with people for people. So I thought that was another highlight.
Yes, you're really good interpersonal skills, or, you know, you don't always feel you have them in the beginning of your career, but they're the sort of things that you work on and you improve on. So there's no need for anyone to feel the need to be an extrovert or anything like that. It just means that you work on relationships and seeing what works for the clients you're working with, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. And being, I guess, authentic and genuine. You know, I think in health promotion, we are, you know, we're not trying to sell you something that isn't good for you. We're trying to do good. And I think that's the amazing thing about health promotion. I don't understand why anybody wouldn't want to work in health promotion for that sense, because I think, you know, we understand even more so now with the pandemic how important our health and well-being is. You know, we don't have an economy or, you know, a functioning society if we don't have good health and well-being. So
we just might actually move on into the area of health promotion, and I suppose why is it important, you know? So maybe, you know, you talk to us about why we should be concerned about our health and well-being, and not only concerned, be moved to action, you know. And how do you mobilize everybody, and kind of give us a bit of a taste about what is important there?
Why does it matter? Well, I guess, you know, we're human beings, so fundamentally at our core, you know, well-being, our welfare, it's a human right, it's a basic need. I think if we think about happiness, and I guess that's something we would all want. You know, if we don't have good health and well-being, you know, we don't necessarily have a good life, I think. Or not that we don't have a good life, but I think, you know, you can have a health I'm rambling there a bit now.
You're okay. That's allowed. We're all allowed to ramble. This is the whole idea of a podcast, Caroline, is that, you know, you have time to let the mind wander a bit. So what you were actually saying there was that, just to help you with that and just kind of help you reframe. So what you were actually saying, that it's a basic human right, you know, so we're really talking about those basic needs in life, you know. So if anyone's familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, we often like talk about food and shelter, okay, as kind of, you know, some of those basic human needs that really we can't move on onto looking towards anything or looking goals in life if we don't have food and water and things like that. So maybe we'll bring it from that basic level, and then we can draw it up into how it can even enhance other aspects and we can broader life goals.
Yeah, I think I was getting I was getting too philosophical, but
okay. We always have room for Aristotle in the room. That's quite all right.
I was thinking, what is the meaning of life?
We could probably do with a bit of that as well, Caroline. Yeah.
But I think, look, I guess in today's world, there's been a, you know, the way we've constructed some of our environments, you know, they're not always conducive to health. And so we're at a point in time where we kind of have to undo some things or build health in, because I think, you know, with this growth of the world and society and economies, we haven't always put health first. And I think that's something we need to start doing now. And, you know, Nell Noddings is a really good philosopher in the Department of Education. She's not in the Department of Education, sorry. She's in the world of education. She talks about like flourishing. So I guess, you know, the WHO, we define well-being as a positive concept. It's, you know, it's not just the absence of disease or infirmity. You know, it's a positive concept where you're thriving. And I think it means different things to different people, and that can be a challenge when we're working in it, that what well-being means to me or to you, Siobhan, might be very different to some of the students listening, or to people in positions of power and management and that kind of thing. So I think, you know, collectively, you know, having those definitions of well-being is really, really important, and working towards that. So that's at a broader end, you know, and I think coronavirus is probably brought that to the front, that look how important it is, you know, where our world has kind of stopped because of it. So
yeah, so just even to bring it, like, tie up a couple of those points there as well, Caroline, what you're saying, and I kind of liked that idea that you have the broader sense of understanding what it means. But I suppose what it's really important for all of us to do is to take that broader understanding of what thriving is. Mm-hmm. And bring it down to, well, what does thriving mean to me? Thriving, you know, to me would be a lot of different things, including, you know, managing a bit of adversity as well. It's not the absence of adversity, or it's not the absence of challenges, or, you know, where's, you know, what am I going to do? How am I going to manage next month's paycheck or things like that? It's, you know, it's micro things, and it's mm-hmm. big things as well. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. When we're bringing that around, so what you've been talking here is about this big picture stuff, really mm-hmm. society level, even looking from your position and point of view in DCU, you're looking at that big picture mm-hmm. story. But mm-hmm. on a micro level, what are the types of things that, say, the individual can begin to look at, and kind of, not for, I suppose, I don't want everything to be a reduction to a checklist, but yeah. at the same time, there is a usefulness in having a check in, I suppose, on different aspects of our health and well-being. And mm-hmm. what would you say to anybody today is to kind of say, well, I'm not really sure what way my health and well-being is. Maybe it's actually pretty okay, but, you know, how would I look at it?
Mm. Well, I suppose you can kind of break it down into sort of your mental and emotional well-being, and then your physical well-being, and, you know, the two can often interplay. And this, and, you know, especially on these lockdowns, we think about controllable. So, you know, you have a choice over certain things and other things you don't. So, you know, back to basics is sleep. You know, are we getting enough sleep? Are we getting quality sleep? What's our nutrition like? Are we making better choices, and not giving after ourselves when we make, you know, a lesser, better choice, if that's a better way of saying, unhealthy choice? Because, you know, food is something to be very careful around, our language with food, and not saying that food is good or bad, because all food is food, really. It's substance that we eat, and some of it is more nutritious than others. So you think about your sleep, you think about, you wake up in the morning, what you have for your breakfast, what your meals are like. Are you moving throughout the day? So physical activity is so important. And often those things will help shift your emotional mood. So if you're a little bit down, something's happened, you know, those things can be really stabilizing to you. So having a glass of water, going for a walk, you know, chatting to a friend. So think about things that make you happy, make you feel grateful. So gratitude is really important. And I think you touched on something there about resilience. So, like, a, you know, having health and well-being, it's not about not having challenges in our life. We absolutely have that. It's about having kind of healthy behaviors that sustain that. So and I think it's always changing. So, you know, this time of year might look very different to next year, or during exam period, you know, you need to think about your sleep, you need to think about caffeine, you know, all of that. So I think the basics will be sleep, connecting with others, physical activity, and eating well.
And it's like that we don't have to be the gold A standard on every aspect of that, but it's just touching in on it, you know, and mm-hmm. as the saying goes, start off with the first meal, decent enough breakfast, a little bit of a, you know, bit of fruit mid-morning, maybe bit of lunch, you know, somewhere half decent, bit of dinner, or if you like, if you're having your dinner in the middle of the day because you're online working or online learning nowadays, you know, and then what are you going to have for your supper? Maybe go for a 20-minute walk at lunchtime, maybe organise to safely exercise in the evening time, even if it's only another walk. Like, sometimes we feel all this sounds boring, but in actual fact, doing it, it's just putting the gear on is the biggest step, you know, putting the shoes on, whatever. And it's just kind of just going and doing it. And then the benefits, I don't think I've ever come back from any piece of exercise saying I shouldn't have done that.
Exactly. You know?
Or I often say to myself, or sometimes you go out and you do something, you're kind of crap, like, you know, I try to run, Caroline, but I'm a bit of a shuffler. And then I always say, well, it was still better than sitting on the couch, do you know, no matter how bad, you know, because sometimes you go out and you're just crap, you know what I mean? Just crap, you know, the legs don't move, they're like concrete, and what happens? At the same time, it's still better than the couch. That's the way, well, my philosophy anyway, for want of a better word. Well, that's what I do to convince myself anyway, you know.
And I was going to touch on something there around social media, because I think that definitely impacts these kind of basic things that we do. So we might see that Joe over the road is running a marathon, you know.
Oh, stop it, yeah.
So it's not about that, as you said. It's like, well, where am I lying on the couch every evening? Because then maybe I could try doing a 20-minute walk. Because if we could keep comparing, we'll just never—you'll never get off the couch. You'd think there was no point. And you know, Niall Moynihan, when he's doing his talks around physical activity, he'll talk about like the biggest benefits you'll see in your health is somebody who isn't doing anything to start doing something. Those who are already active and increases that, they're not going to benefit as much. So I think our emotional well-being, you know, we need to check in on that. And you know, if you're having a bad day and you go for a walk, you mightn't be the happiest person walking home, but it will carry you through and it might move something. You know, it's not always a guarantee that that exercise, you can't outrun, you know, particularly mental health issues and things like that, but they do carry us and they do make us feel better.
But sometimes we get a slight reframing on what's going on, and that can be enough to, you know, move and shift a little things a bit more. So I suppose one, from a career management point of view, I have a number of things that we wouldn't mind talking about. I suppose I'm very conscious of being able to, you know, from an employability point of view, it's all about the concept of being kept employable. And I suppose there's a number of kind of those crossover issues here, and we'll just throw them all out and see where we pick up from it. It's just this whole concept of the longevity of careers now, that we're going to be working up until, you know, possibly 70 or maybe beyond for some people. And I suppose it's the role of developing good practices, insofar as any of us can, at whatever stage of our career we are right now. So some of our listeners could be mid-career, you know, some of our listeners are only starting off in their career. So, you know, and I would see third level as being part of their career management story. So it's really to kind of think, you know, we have long careers now, but it's to look at the quality of that longevity in the career and how, you know, health and well-being can enhance the experience of the career journey as well.
Absolutely. I think it's funny because when I talk about careers, I might be thinking more about having a job, you know, having a job and having third level education is putting you at a sort of in the social determinants of health, you know, being able to be employed and be employable is really, really important because you need that job and that Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, we need money to have a roof over our head or have food, and, you know, maybe look at your gym membership. So I would certainly notice from, you know, fruit picking to now, you know, what I can do that I couldn't do then. Sure. But I think at any stage, it's really, really important. It impacts everything, you know. It impacts, you know, if you're passionate about your job or you like your job or you're able to find benefits from your job, that's going to feed, you know, your own life and your own satisfaction. And I think the two work together. And I think even things like mindfulness, I found that recently, you know, interacting with people and being mindful and not, you know, I think stress in the workplace is obviously huge, and other people's stress and feeding out of that. So if you can keep yourself regulated, you can sort of navigate that and make better choices. You can respond instead of react. you know, going for a walk is really great for the headspace. So can we keep those basics in, as well as maybe some of the more intelligent things like not replying to that email straight away, having a taking a deep breath, or going for that 10-minute walk. I always show a brain scan of, you know, a 20-minute walk after sitting versus a brain scan after a 20-minute walk. But you know, the colors light up after you do a 20-minute walk. So obviously that's going to impact you when you're sitting at the desk or you're in a meeting, your ability to focus, concentrate. Your employer will see that. I think being able to manage the world and stress that comes with the work is really, really important, and dealing with people is really, really important. And if you're to move up in your career, I think that definitely plays a role. When some research has been done on, like, what makes, I know I'm bringing it back to a university setting, but what makes a university sort of a healthy place for staff and students, and I think this is very resonant with the staff, is that it really was coming back to feeling valued, being listened to, and having a positive physical environment. So your connections are really, really important in your relationships, as well as those other things. So, yeah.
And I suppose from our perspective in the career service, you know, whilst we meet students, and whether there be early career students or mid-career professionals that will be coming to us, we always try and meet them where they are, and that's the particular stage of their lives. But, and also the concern that they come with us, to us with. But we're always very, very passionate about the whole area of employability and realistically that whole career management. And I think people are often taken aback, you know, initially when we discuss, you know, their health and well-being as part of their career development and their career management. So because they often wonder what that got to do with the price of eggs, but you see, it has everything to do with the price of eggs, because if you don't have your health and well-being, it's very hard to maintain a sustainable income. So if we're even thinking about it, the very, very basics of it. But also then we love looking at about how looking at your hobbies and your interests and how they can be incorporated into your whole life, and how your career can serve the life that you want as well. Because there is not a job for life anymore. So we don't have to, we can't really work with anybody anymore and say, well, listen, if you choose that road, that's going to bring you through to retirement. Now, for some people, they would love that. They would love that certainty. But unfortunately, just the way the world is, we're, you know, into like the fourth industrial revolution. We're moving into a different space entirely. And for the most part, most people don't want to be in the same job for life anymore. So with the uncertainty that brings people about, you know, where they're going to look at their career, we're always trying to work with them on the pillars that will support them in any of the career decisions that, for positive or negative reasons, they will engage with. So some people, unfortunately, will have to engage with a career transition due to redundancy, for example. But other people will be engaging with a career transition because they now want to move into a different career for very positive reasons, at any stage of their lives. So it's really looking at the pillars. And I think we might use different language, Caroline, but I think we're speaking the same. Might be using different words, but we're speaking the same language. So we would always look at, you know, the pillars in somebody's life, you know, their family and friends. Okay. Where do they would have a strong sense of place? What do they do in their community? Now, their community could be broader to include, what do they like to do? Do they like to do yoga? Do they like to play five-a-side? Is there anything they'd like to take up? Is there anything in their local area they'd like to get engaged with? It could be everything from being involved in, you know, local St. Vincent de Paul, to the Tidy Towns Committee, to maybe getting involved in the local AmDram, you know, club or society and things like that. And then having a look at that kind of broader life and those pillars. Okay, and then looking then as how the career can serve the life. I suppose I always kind of look at it from the point of view of those four pillars, including the career as being a very strong pillar in your life, is that a chair or a stool can stand very steady on four pillars, on four legs, right? Remove one pillar, okay, and the stool can keep up on three, but it will not stay standing on two. So it's kind of moving on with all of those pillars in some shape or form. Some of those pillars or legs of the stool will be stronger at different parts of our lives than other. So in our early career, the family and friends obviously is very, very important, but the career one is very important because you're trying to establish it. You're trying to get stability in that leg of the stool. So there's a lot of focus on it. But then as you start to move through life, other legs need to be really built on. So in the event of a career transition for positive or negative reasons, and that career leg, you know, gets quite disrupted, then you have those other three legs of the stool, your family, your friends, your sense of place and your community to bring you through. So in that community, it would be that whole health and well-being structure there, because it's activity, it's social connectedness, it's getting out there, it's being part of your local environment and being fully immersed as a person in your local society. So I suppose they're the sort of things that I think that, you know, can career can really serve, you know, and give purpose and meaning as well to your overall health and well-being, because a career with a purpose gives you energy. A career with a purpose and meaning makes, you know, can encourage you to look after your health and well-being, because you know that you want to really do this job. Let's face it, some days we don't, but most of the time you want a job or career that you feel energized and motivated to do. And one of the things we do know, to maintain that level of energy and enthusiasm, we do need to look after the pillars of our health, which, as you quite rightly said, was like the sleep, the nutrition, social connectedness. What am I missing? Exercise or movement, I suppose, is the general term for it. And, you know, and it can be hugely, and anyone I meet that really love their career, you know, and understand that, you know, and they're thriving in their career. They do have their ups and downs in it. They do have their up and down days, things that go well, things that don't go well for them. But ultimately, if they're reasonably satisfied with it, it can really add to their health and well-being, because the stress levels aren't going up, the blood pressure isn't going up, you know, there's the heart rate is kept at a normal level, all of the things that, you know, that you've maybe access to good quality food at work or good welfare facilities that you can actually heat up your own dinner then, you know, things like that, all of those things interplay. And I think you said something earlier on, Caroline, I might bring you back into, because I think all of us, including myself, we can sometimes compartmentalize all of these things. You know what I mean? That you said the mental and the emotional well-being and then the physical health. But everything, every cell in our body is connected to the other cell in some shape or form. So it's to, I suppose, how do you work with people to consider, you know, the mind-body connection as being one and the same and not separate?
I suppose with my role in DCU, I'm very much a zooming out, so I'm thinking about a community and not on an individual basis. So I think if we're looking at an individual, I guess it's where you're at. So if, you know, sometimes we have a major life event, maybe it is that transition of a career, or maybe we're struggling to get on the job ladder or get into the career that we want, and that can be a space where we might, you know, I think sometimes your psyche and your emotions can call to you so often, anxiety or a bit of depression, there might be something broader going on. And I know I would have experienced a bit of anxiety when things were a little bit more uncertain. But I think it's just, again, you know, at an individual level, it's having an interest and awareness of health. And then, I mean, it's different for different people. So when we look at the stages of behavior change, you know, there is a stage called pre-contemplation, which means you're not even aware that there's a problem there. So like if you look at smoking, if you take that for an example, a lot of the advertisements now I've seen lately are, you know, there's a young kid in the hospital with the dad and she's saying, "Dad, you won't go in there again." So what they're trying to do is maybe provoke family members to have conversations. I think it's very individual and it's very different for different people. What we try and do is poke it, like multi-pronged approach, you know, not one thing will work for everybody. So is it TV advertisements? Is it cultural, you know, we're working at smoke-free campus at the moment. So when you put up the signs, there's legislation there. So there's an environment that's actually calling to you to maybe support your decision around quit. Your workplace, you know, does the health and safety person send around an email to say, you know, we've got quit supports this week? So if you look at that, I think it's kind of complicated. I don't want to say that things are complex, but they are, because as humans, it's messy and it's complicated. But at the same time, it's very simple. But like, if we looked at the, you know, the well-being of the university or as a workplace, we think about the physical environment, the social environment, our academic learning environment. So are we looking at well-being there, our policies, and then personal development? But I do think, and I know I'm really advocating for health promotion here, and I know as you know, at a personal level, this mightn't be as informative, but I think What I'll find in health promotion that we tend to point a lot of the finger at the individual, and I do think, you know, at a bigger level that happens, and I think that's not always the case. So your environment might be really conducive to you eating really badly, and you know, I want to say that that's not your fault, but you know, if there can be an intervention there, whatever that looks like, amazing. If you can move into that contemplation phase where you're realizing that there might be a problem, then that's where you can make a choice and you can seek help. But
yeah, it's just interesting you say that, because with a lot of things is, you know, if you can design out the heavy lifting out of it, that can be really, really useful. So, you know, wider staircases and new buildings to encourage people to use the stairs and not, you know, and keep the lifts down, you know, a little bit away from the stairs, so people are not motivated to use them, or they're, you know, trying to, there's so many things even around if there's a stairs and an escalator, not that we have an escalator in the university, but, you know, people will take the escalator and you kind of go, right, you know, you know, because they were kind of hardwired to take the easy road, know, so it's just sometimes, I suppose, it would come back to your point, is sometimes it's hard to make the right decisions because, you know, the lift or the escalator is more attractive, you know, and we're just humans, you know, and it's not to be always so hard on ourselves, but it's also, I think you brought up a lovely intersection there for where careers and health and well-being can really intersect as well. You mentioned health and well-being, like it's a bit of a messy business, you know, it's you're great today, you're brutal tomorrow, you're overall, you know, it can be so up and down. And that's where we feel careers are very messy, and people feel that, you know, it should be very linear. This should be on by the numbers, like, you know, go up this step, then you go to the next step. And it's more like a jungle gym or snakes and ladders, as opposed to anything that's anyway linear. But we have this perception it is linear. And unfortunately, it's not, because life is not linear, as we well know it. But sometimes we forget, we think we're in control of everything. We think we can control the chaotic world or chaotic lives. But it's really, as you said earlier on, is to work on what can control the controllables is, you know, we have to let the experts look after the bigger coronavirus picture, but we just have to do our steps, which is the social distancing, the masking, and looking after, you know, putting as decent a food as we can afford and doing a bit of exercise, keeping connected. There's the other thing I wanted to ask you as well is, and, you know, because I always feel, I'm a different generation. Maybe I don't appreciate social media. I just find it very toxic, and I can see how people are literally, you know, drawn into everything. So just to share my personal story, I'm not big onto the social media, but I suppose at the start of this virus thing, I was kind of going, maybe I should be a little bit more connected, you know, and I downloaded Twitter or one of those things. But then I was reading stuff and I could feel my heart rate rising up. And I said, oh, for the love of God, I can feel my heart moving, you know, a little bit too fast there. So do you know what it is? Deleted the app. Heart rate was fine. Okay. Does that make sense? And it's that awareness of the effect. But I think if you are very immersed in social media and it is part of your day-to-day life, I'm just wondering about the awareness. You know, it would be very hard for people to tap in to you know, to, you know, because some people are viewing social media, and maybe they're not actually very affected, but other people are. Like the same way as people, often people, you know, especially youngsters, would be playing some of those, I don't even know what you call them, the Grand Theft Auto and all those games. And some people get, some youngsters get very exercised and very into it, and then some people can do it and they're not really affected by it at all. They see it through a different lens. So have you anything on social media for people to kind of maybe get an understanding, you know, how does it sit with their life? Maybe it sits very well with them. Maybe not. How do you get a sense of that though?
I think it'd be very hard though not to be affected by social media in some way, you know, even unbeknownst to you. I think, you know, it's there for a reason, and the makers of applications and Facebook and this whole social, I guess it's social, so we're social beings, and you know, they're very intelligent in their drawing you in. So I would recommend everybody to watch The Social Dilemma. But I think it's huge. I think it plays a huge role. I think it's a territory we need to look at in terms of health and wellbeing, because if you think about, there's less laws online. So, you know, McDonald's can market to you, the belt to tone your stomach can advertise to you. And I think they're kind of feeding you what you think you might need. And so it's really shaping our world now more than ever. And I know Coleman Nocter, a great psychologist, psychotherapist from St. Pat's Mental Health Service, he's done a lot of research on young people and social media. And, you know, he would say that I think growing up with social media is hard. It is harder. And I think you've missed that space of having time to yourself. You know, if there's no gap in your world now, you're always connected, or you're always available, you know, you're technically always available, or there's always information and news coming to you. So, I would encourage everybody to take a check in at, you know.
And I wonder, if you did a detox, would that kind of give you an indication?
Yeah, but you know, some of the experts will say we can't get away from social media. Yeah. So I think to advertise detoxes might be great. Absolutely reduce it. And if we're thinking about things of how to make it better, it's thinking about who you follow. Like, are you following people who make you feel good? Like, especially with health and looking at nutrition and fitness, be really cautious and careful about who you follow, because there's a whole industry making money off you, off us, selling us detoxes, selling us fitness plans, selling us bodies that we don't look like. And I think we've a long way to go. You know, even this morning I was looking up leggings, and there was people with six packs and the most perfect bodies, and I thought, sure, I never know if the leggings are going to be nice on me, because that's not me.
Or the leggings that don't actually stay up then.
Or they don't make me look like her, because I'm never going to look like her. And you know, I do not that I feel sorry, but I do realize the pressure that young people are on, and there's a false
and
sense,
and they're not so young, Caroline, now, you know. We're not immune. What I was going to say, or I'm not immune, I shouldn't be categorizing you, Caroline. I just want to think for our listeners today, you know, what would be, you know, your top tips for anyone listening today and say, listen, I really enjoyed that conversation. I got something out of it. My mind is in a bit of a spin here. Where would you kind of say, you know, is there anything on your own website or on the develop loop or module on loop? Is there anything there that you could kind of say, listen, quite, you know, if in doubt, follow these few tips and see how you get on, you know?
Yeah, I guess I know I make it wishy-washy, and again, looking for certainty is something that we'll do. So like, I'd love to give you, if everybody goes for a 20-minute walk, I guarantee you this. I can guarantee that, but I really would encourage people to maybe journal or have a think about, you know, if this has triggered something in you, really reflect on it and have a conversation with somebody you trust, and maybe think about something in your life that you kind of feel like you'd like to work on. I think there's power in that, and there's power in trusting yourself and tuning into yourself and looking inward, not looking outward. So I really at the core want to encourage that, and always seek help, whether that's professional help or that's a really close friend or a good adult. You know, we talk about this jigsaw, we'll often talk about a one good adult, because that's coming through the research. You know, if you do have something that's on your mind, you know, chat to somebody, whatever that is, whether that's I want to move more or I'm not feeling great, I've been feeling a little bit low. But to move to the side of that and thinking about our situation now, it is really about planning your day and having a structure. I can't tell you how that can support you. Like that's absolutely been supporting me, and we know the evidence is there. I know the OT, Susan, will talk about that. I'm sure you will have talked about. So planning your day, putting in some structure. So, you know, is there a 10-minute walk that you might do in the morning? Or, you know, if walking isn't your thing, if that doesn't get you going, is it yoga? Or do you think, if you think that that's a load of crap, is it running? You know, we all have our own things, but definitely get moving, get breathing, you know, tuning into the breath. Putting structure in your day, eating well, like look up some recipes, have a bit of fun with it. You know, do you love Jamie Oliver? Or, you know, think about some reputable people that might inspire you or encourage you, might be your peers. Eating well, taking your lunch breaks, taking breaks, chatting to friends. You know, if you're looking at an assignment and you're thinking, I don't know what to do with this or how this works, pick up the phone and maybe ring somebody instead of WhatsApping. You know, maybe say, hey, could we chat later? Think about your social bubble and going for walks with people. And yeah, I guess it's that. And maybe it's picking something. So maybe you're smoking, you want to stop smoking, or maybe you're drinking a little bit too much, and you want to look at that.
Brilliant. No, it's great. And just a reminder to everybody that for those who are DCU students, as part of the Develop module on Loop, there's really excellent resources there. From that Caroline has actually put together to help you with your health and well-being. Yeah, you forget to promote yourself. Yes, Caroline. And then you obviously your own website as well. Can you just give us the URL there for your own website there, Caroline?
Yeah, well, it's sportsandwellbeing-dcuhealthy.ie. But we do have an Instagram account, and we do have a Twitter, and we have
Stay off them now, Caroline.
I know the irony of me saying that, but if you follow good people, I do hope and guarantee that that makes you a bit better. But I think you know, we're planning some things for semester two. We're looking at smoke-free campus. I know that that's not exactly you know, if there's a sense that maybe that isn't a priority, but I think actually it is, because
we have to move on with life as well. So
yeah.
I don't want to get distracted, and I know we're going to finish up, but I suppose I do have a question for you, is around the vaping.
Okay, yes.
Because I suppose I'm just looking, I can see people, you know, obviously taking up vaping as opposed to, you know, somebody that is trying to get off smoking, you know, and using vaping as an in-between experience, if that makes sense. So we have this new phenomenon of not the smoke or the vapor.
Yeah, the vapor. And I do think there is research in America that's come out that, like, you know, that industry is very much acting exactly like the smoking industry, and they're colourful and they're attractive and they've lovely flavours and they know exactly what they're doing. They're marketing to young people and kids, and they're trying to lure people in. So as of now, like, vaping will be treated the exact same as smoking when it comes to our smoke-free policy, because that's what the Irish government has mandated. You know, in the NHS are prescribing vaping as a method of giving up cigarettes, but that's for like a lifetime smoker. You know, it's nearly seen as the gum or the patch. It's not seen as something, but that's not in Ireland. So,
no, it's very the potential of it was that it was temporary, but now it's becoming a thing in of its own right. So I presume the quit programs, you know, would be every vaping, you can go to the quit programs for vaping and smoking, I presume.
Now, we don't have much data, and the data will suggest that there's not a massive percentage of people just taking up vaping as is, but that, just because the research isn't there, doesn't mean that that's not
but there's a creep there nonetheless, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. So
listen, we're going to finish up. Thank you so much. I definitely got a lot out of it. I can see how we all can kind of, you know, as the saying goes, everything is connected and interconnected. I hope our listeners have got something from today, even if it's just one small nugget or one heightened bit of awareness that might help them engage with being a bit more reflective and positively reflective, you know. But this is not meant for anyone to beat themselves up with. It's meant to be just to kind of say a gentle nudge, and I suppose to think that, you know, we're all in the same dilemmas in life, and it's just to maybe have a look and what would be the how you might get on the journey to thriving a little bit more. So thank you so much for that, Caroline.
Thanks, Siobhan. Thanks for having me. That was great.